I'm in the beautiful home
thank you.
At 154 Major Street of John Scalpello. John described to me that his parents came from Malta separately.
Yes.
Both lived at Harvard and Bathurst. I guess that's how they met each other.
Yeah, that's how they met. Yes.
Right.
My mom was at the corner house of Harvard and Bathurst, and my dad lived four doors south, and that's how they met. And all their friends, that's where they met them, too. They were rooming houses, and that's how the immigrants found their first housing, I guess. You know, they shared kitchens and bathrooms, and they all made like 60 cents an hour, if they were lucky.
and then they bought...
Yes, they bought 153 Harbert with another couple that lived at the same location at Bathurst and Harbert. They were German, a German couple. He came from Germany, and they met here, too. It was the same story as my parents. They met in the houses here. And they bought the house together. Smitty and Lisa lived upstairs, and my parents lived downstairs until they started fighting. Over the heat at start. It was about the heat. My mom would turn down the heat, and they would turn up the heat.
Well, that can be a big enough issue to make
enemies. Yes, that's
enemies.
Right. So my mom was able to save a few thousand dollars and buy them out, and then they went to the big house up at the St. Clair and Bathurst, I guess.
So before we go on, I just want to say to you, thank you very much for
giving
our history committee your time.
Okay,
so your parents bought 153 Harvard in 1961.
It was either 60 or 61, because I know they had it before I was born.
And your mother lived there until 2013,
when she
died
just a short while ago. She passed away June 4th. Yeah. So she's been in the neighborhoods since 1957.
And then 1961, owning 153 Harvard until 2013.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Now you were born at...
I was born at Mount Sinai and lived at that home, 153 Harvard, until about 1990, I think it was. Yeah, I went to St. Peter's, Central Tech, and then Ryerson after that. But always lived at home. That was the way we could afford to. My parents could afford to send me to university.
Okay, but you lived from 1961 when you were born until 1990.
Around 1990, might have been 90, 91, in there somewhere around.
So you lived in this neighborhood your entire childhood until about 30 years old.
Yeah, about 30 years old. That's right.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I like to ask the ages is because you can talk to me about. I know the stages of life that you went through here.
Yes.
So you went through your young childhood, your adolescence, your young adulthood.
Young adulthood.
So that's helpful for me to know the ages that you were. It determines some of the questions I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, and I was also always in the neighborhood because my mom was here, and when my dad passed away, we had to help. So I was always in tune with the neighborhood.
Right, and now you came back.
And we came back, yes. Yeah. Well, there isn't a better neighborhood in the city, I don't think. Well, everybody advocates for their neighborhood, but whenever I talk to people, even when we're in Blair West, they keep talking about what a great neighborhood, and you're so lucky to live there. They never used to say that in the 60s.
Okay, that's a good place to start. What did they say in the 60s about this neighborhood, we now call Harvard Village?
Well, this neighborhood was considered basically a slum in those days. It was for the immigrants, right? And it's true. It was wave after wave after wave of immigrants. I experienced a few. I'm sure the people like my parents or previous to my parents, the boys in Major, would have experienced even more waves, right? These homes are all built by the British, English they were, not British, English. They were usually the skilled workers who built the bigger homes up in the annex, and Rosedale and that, and they lived in these. That's why some of them are, if you notice, some are built to higher degrees or different levels. This one is a custom. It has stone that you won't find on any other one. So whoever built this probably was maybe a mason or something. Mm-hmm. The finishes in here were superior to some of the houses, too. My parents didn't have the same finishes this one did. So whoever built this one had a bit more money, I think, and he had a larger lot, so it showed he had a bit more money.
But you're saying people have said to you, what a great neighborhood you live in now.
Now, yes.
Do me a favor, talk a little bit more about what it was like during those early years and who lived here.
Well, when we grew up, I do remember no one had air conditioning in those days, so we would sit on the veranda to cool off. Everybody sat on the veranda. TV was two or three stations. And directly next door to us which is 151, I believe that one is. Yeah, it would be 151, was a Jewish couple, and he was a barber. And we found out years later when he passed away and his wife had Alzheimer's that they were never married.
Oh, at that time.
Yes, and they had lived together 60, 65 years. Yes.
Very, really yes. unusual at that
yes.
time.
Now, he was probably the worst barber in the world. He was mean. He'd yell at you. He'd pull your hair. I ran out there. My mom took me one time there to have my hair cut, and I ran out screaming because he was so rough. He wasn't a very good barber that way.
and he was living in sin.
Yes,
two
that's
terrible things.
That's right. And now, he was, like most of the Jewish people in this era, a Polish Jew. They were all from parts of even the
Eastern
Harvard Bakery.
Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're mostly Polish, actually. If not, they're Ukrainian. And it was all Jewish businesses here. The restaurant was a fishmonger. Harvard Bakery was always there since the 20s, I believe. Next door was a barber. The garage where the fish and chips was, that was another person that sold fish, I believe, out of that little garage. Right across the street was the Harvard Laundry, it was called. It was four Jewish brothers who owned it.
So you were getting closer to Brunswick now.
Yeah, Brunswick, actually Borden, right between Brunswick and Borden. There's the social housing in front,
yes.
my mom's. Well,
yes.
that was a laundry there. And they owned three or four houses behind, and some of the people who worked for them, he rent out the houses to them. So those houses right in front of Central Tech on Borden, mm-hmm. those were owned by that laundry also. The social housing now fills up that full property. There's the little synagogue, and right across the street from the synagogue is a little
That's
yellow...
That's on Brunswick.
On Brunswick. There's a little yellow house. Now, that was a kosher chicken place. It's right in the middle of the block, right across the street from the...
From it's got
the,
a lot of windows.
Yes,
place.
Yeah. It looks like it doesn't look like a house.
Yeah.
It looks like, well, that was kosher chicken in there.
The chickens actually live there?
Well, in the garage, he would slaughter the... It's a two-story garage in the back there, if you notice. He would slaughter the chickens there. As kids, we noticed that because there used to be feathers everywhere. And now, I don't understand kosher. I believe that they have to be blessed by a rabbi, I think.
Yeah, and yeah. killed in a specific way.
In a specific way. Well, that's yeah. what they did. So it was
did you hear or smell
oh, yeah.
the chicken?
Oh, yeah.
Both hear
oh, yeah,
and smell?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The chickens were there. They'd come in alive, and they'd be in the little store window hanging later in the day. And he sold eggs also.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes.
Before he killed them, he
did. Yes, yeah. that's right. It was pretty smelly. Well, the whole neighborhood was a little bit smelly in that respect. Now we're smelly from garbage cans from restaurants, but in those days it was fish and chicken and laundries, and it was more in, I don't know how to put it, it wasn't quite industrial, but it wasn't like it is today after it became gentrified and everything has to be clean. And, yeah. we would live on, sit on the steps at night, I do remember this, neighbors would either talk to each other or talk right across because they had a fight with that neighbor, but they all sat on the verandas.
So for about 4 months a year, there was a tremendous
yes.
amount of verandas.
Yeah, there. Well, actually, most of the year, except in the extreme winter, people would sit because there wasn't much. There was radio and a few channels on TV, and it was all black and white in those days. So you sat in, and that's how you socialized. Today, people have enough of people, so they come in the house and they lock themselves in their house and play in computers. It was a different time. And I caught the tail end of that. In the 20s and 30s, it was probably even more so. That's why many of these houses, the verandas are not original to a Victorian. Those were probably built in the 20s, the little verandas. My mom's house doesn't have a covered veranda. That's probably more in tune to a proper Victorian. They were put in so people could go out there and socialize and sit on the veranda and cool.
The verandas, I think, on Harvard are even smaller.
They're
than
tiny.
These.
They're yeah. just basically a step. So when yeah. you sit on them, you're almost down the street.
Yeah. But they still sat out there.
They sat out there, that's right. Harvard was not a busy street like it was today. It was always a main road, but it wasn't a thoroughfare like Bloor College was. It was a very lonely street in many ways. My mom used to tell me how ugly Harvard was when she first moved to the country. She liked college, and they used to go down to college to have fun. There was bars and things down there, like the Horseshoe. The El Macambo was high-end in those days. You went to listen to jazz. There was always Mars down there. My dad used to go there for breakfast, and you know, it was always that. Where there's Sneaky D's at the corner of,
yeah.
well, that was called a Sanka. It was always a bar, but it was called a Sanka before. And that's where my dad would go and talk to the men and come back home, right? One too many and sometimes. And for fun, they used to go to the Silver Dollar or the El Macambo, or there was a place, the Brown Derby at Yonge and Dundas. There was a famous place for jazz down there. Yeah, they're all gone, these places now. Yeah.
But your parents did a lot of their socializing.
Yes.
I mean, front verandas.
Yeah.
But if they were going out, they stayed in College Street.
Yeah, College Street was the main street. But before the subway went on Bloor, Bloor was not a main... it was College Street that was the more important street, always was. Bloor Street became important after the subway.
Well, I didn't
yeah,
know that.
So that, the better restaurants and bars and even hotels, like even that awful hotel at Spadina and College. Well, that was the Waverly was a high-end hotel at one time. It's a dump now, which is going to be torn down. You're just putting condos in there.
Yeah.
But it was there that they went. And then Kensington Market, we did the shopping. Like in those days, my parents didn't have cars. Very few people had cars in those days. So we're going back to that time where you shopped in your neighborhood and you went to the local grocer and all that. That's all coming back. If you notice, people are on bicycles and doing the exact same thing. Yeah, the days of, you know, the suburbs are done, and everybody's coming back into the city. We were kind of that wave too, right? Although we didn't live truly in the suburb, but that's why we came back too. Mm-hmm. The old days, you did that naturally.
So what is making you come back?
It is the neighborhood. It is that you can walk everywhere. There's restaurants, there's bakeries, there's everything at your fingertips here. So you really don't need the car. Until I have to go to work... the car sits most of the time, right? That's why it was important we had parking, because I still want a car. It's just that I need to park it somewhere. But we walk everywhere. We use the neighborhood. The designer, the colorist I was telling you, she said that you're the kind of people who use the neighborhood. So you get to... When we were in Bloor West, we used the neighborhood. When we're here, we're using it even more so. My parents had to use it, because that's what you did. You know, there were drug stores. Like, I'll tell you where the Boulevard Cafe, that was a drug store.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Before
Chabichu, I believe it's called
Chabichu.
Well, that was Manny's. He was a pinball place. But before that, he was a green grocer, or a grocery store, kind of variety store, and also a bit of a pharmacy, too, in there. Yeah, but
that corner was a busy corner.
Yeah,
that's my street.
Yeah. It was neighborhood, you know, neighborhood little businesses in there.
And the pinball place, was that a popular place for Central Tech?
Yes. Manny's turned it into pinball, burgers, that kind of place. But after the pharmacy closed at where the Boulevard Cafe was, another guy, what was his name, Louis, bought it. He was a Spanish man. Anyways, he turned it into a pinball place, too.
So there were two pinball places.
There were quite a few. Where the where Gigi's Pizza was, that was a pinball place. And where Nova Pizza is, that was a pinball place.
Oh, four of them.
Yeah, with the Gettoni, the soccer games, pinball and pizza and Coke and things like that. Yeah, it was for Central Tech. Because Central Tech is the biggest biggest high school in the British Commonwealth. And when we went there, they had portables even. And it was up to, I think... 3,600-3,700 kids in there.
Oh, huge.
It was huge. I think there's only about 1,500 or so in there right now.
And they've gotten rid of a lot of the technical stuff.
Yes, because tech is considered a dirty word now.
Well, but I was also told it's because it's very expensive, all the equipment. So
you're
making people go to the junior colleges.
Yeah, but everybody, you know, the idea of coming to this country is so your kids do better, and you want them to go to university and have a white-collar job.
Sure, but
times, that's changing in many ways, because some of these guys are making more money than a lot of white-collar people.
And not everybody wants university.
Exactly. It's not for everybody.
It isn't,
My parents, when they came here, they always knew I liked technology, and that's why I went to Central Tech. I could have went to Harvard Collegiate. I had the grades. It's what interested me, but they said, make sure you go to university, too. And that was a lot of the immigrant thought, and it still is today.
So you went to Central Tech, and then you did go to university.
Yes, because there were two courses there. There was the four-year course, where you go and acquire a trade, or the five-year, which you still take the technical courses, but they're pushing you, they're streaming you towards university. It was streaming.
So you did the five-year.
I did the five-year.
So that you got all that technical training.
Yes, but I also, I had grade 13, so I could go to university.
So they kept your options open
for you. Yes, that's right. My parents made sure, they never had much money, but they always said, you're going to university. Then do what you want in life, but you're going to university.
But in the meantime, what you got at Central Tech is how you've spent your life.
That's right, because I'm back teaching technology. Although I did advertising for 16 to 19 years, I forget now what it was. So I worked in You ever watch Mad Men?
No.
Oh, it's about the old school advertising from the 50s. Well, the company I worked for was TDF, and they were the tail end of that. It was the big production houses and that. And it was heavy drinking. Not us. I was in production. It was the salesman and all that. But it was the tail end of that. It was a very exciting business job, but no money in it.
Yeah.
Because when I went to Ryerson, well, kind of in the neighborhood too, I used to walk. I took fine arts there. It's what I was interested in at the time. And as you can see, I'm still quite creative.
Yeah, your home is beautiful.
Yeah.
Seriously beautiful. Yeah.
And even as a child, I always loved architecture. And that's why I do like this neighborhood for that, because I like Victorian homes. And and that's what brought us back to one of these type of houses. Sophie always hated these, because my wife thought they were creepy and scary. But now, then she started liking them when she started coming in, because she always used to see them from the outside, because they're tall and narrow. They can be a little intimidating and scary looking, especially if they're not maintained properly. When she came in, she realized they look small from the outside, but they're big houses.
Well, and they have the potential. I mean, your house looks so much wider because we took the walls down.
Yeah. But my dad was one of the first to start doing this kind of stuff. I do remember as a child helping my dad renovate, because the house was, they paid $9,000 for it, and it was a piece of junk, really. It had no basement. It's the one next door to us at 155, so closer to Boulevard Cafe, still sitting on cedar beams. There's no basement below that. Many of these houses in this area were built with no basements, because in the old days, you didn't live in the basement. It was basically a hole to pour your coal in.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
And in fact, this house, my dad, that was the first thing he removed. There was a, in the middle of the living room, let's say right here, was basically a stove. And that's what heated the house. So the chimney would travel throughout the rooms.
And that heated the house.
That heated the house. And when we bought that house still, my parents still had that. It was coal burning too. And so there was a little basement, I'd say about 10 by 10 in the middle of, with a chute. And so it'd be in the middle right here. And they would deliver it with bags, and you throw it down the chute. And that's how you heated the house. And we're talking 1961, they were still doing that.
And the coal, it was efficient but dirty.
It was very dirty, yes, and messy, because you had to bring it up from that little basement, up a ladder basically, because it wasn't a staircase, and bring it in through your dining room. Yes.
And it was the dust.
It was dusty, and it wasn't very warm either, because they had no insulation in these houses, right? And the only thing that warmed it was this chimney that went, and then finally went up the back.
But you're saying your father removed it?
My dad removed it, and he put in a gas furnace, 1960-61.
Was that pretty early for those?
Yeah, I think so. I would say so, yeah. And then he only liked to work. That's where I got the love of building. And he started taking down walls, open concept. We dug the basement ourselves, and we put it on a foundation, because the house didn't have a foundation. And he started finishing basements. And we had one of the first finished basements that wasn't 5 feet tall. It was like we could stand up in it, 7.5 feet tall.
So your father did it, and you helped him.
Yeah, I helped him. Yeah.
But that was hard work.
It was a really hard work. We kept adding additions to the back of the house, because there were three boys in the house. So I built my own room. I would have been 16 years old. There's an addition off the back of 153 Harvard that I helped build, and I was 16 years old. Didn't really know what I was doing. But it's still there.
And your father was there to help
you. Oh, yeah,
you.
My dad was the one, really. I'm saying I built it, but he...
So you learned all this from your dad.
Yes.
And you went to Central Tech.
Yes.
You had a good education then.
Yeah, it was very...
Because as a young child, you started learning it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, a lot of the... when we were very young, like the Snydermans and... what's his name now? Mervishes and that, the older... because they all grew up in this neighborhood, too, all of them.
Really? Yeah. Snyderman
is... Snyderman, Sam the Record Man.
Right.
Ed Mervish, of course, Honest Ed's. Our mayor, the other mayor, what was his name? Mine is gone right now. Glassman grew up here. He grew up on Manning, I believe it was. Who else grew up here? Quite a few prominent old, the Jewish, because it was a Jewish neighborhood. All our neighbors were Jewish when we came in here. We were almost the first of that wave. Then later it started becoming Italian and Portuguese, and finally the Chinese came in. But all our neighbors were Jewish, I can remember that. Now, those all went to Harvard Collegiate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and very few Jewish people actually went to Central Tech.
Wow. What was it like for you living in a neighborhood that was predominantly Jewish?
As a child, you didn't know any different. And I actually, my parents always said they were very good neighbors. She actually hated when the neighborhood became gentrified because she said those were better people.
So your mother was happy yeah, with the Jewish
yeah,
neighbors?
Yeah, they were fine. There was nothing wrong with them. Uh-huh. But it was kind of funny. We did have the barber on one side. He was Jewish, Polish Jewish. On the other side, the husband was Jewish, but his wife was German. And they hated the barber. They used to fight a lot. That was a funny marriage. And the grandma, we used to call her Nana Spitzer, she babysat us. And she lived two doors over. We loved her because we don't have any family here. All our family's in Malta. We're the only... So they became our family.
You adopted each other.
Yes, that's right. Yes. So she would babysit us. So we spent a lot of time with her, with Nana Spitzer. We might even have pictures here of her. Upstairs, when we bought Smitty and Lisa, they couldn't afford it. So we started renting upstairs to an older couple, Uncle Buck and Auntie May. They weren't, but that's what we called them.
That time... Yeah. Children would not call adults by their first name.
So no, you did not.
A title of grandmother, grandfather,
that's
or else auntie and uncle.
That's right, yeah. But they weren't officially.
I understand. Yeah. So on your floor, there were your parents and three sons,
yes.
After the three
yeah.
of you had all been born. And then the second floor had this auntie and uncle,
yes.
who rented from your parents.
That's right, yes. Uh-huh. And now they worked at the laundry right across the street. I don't know what their job was there, but they worked at that laundry. And it was... funny story with them too. It was they were an older couple. Now, to me, they were older. I have no idea what age they were.
Probably
50. Yeah, they were probably my age. I think they were older than this. And in those days, you would get beer delivered, and they would order 7 cases of Red Cap. As a child, I still remember that because they would deliver it.
7 cases,
24s of Red Cap a week, and they would drink 24 a night as a couple, so 12 each, let's say, and you would never know they were drunk.
They were quiet drinkers.
They were very quiet, very nice people, actually. But they would drink a case of 24 beer every night. Oh, I still remember that because they would deliver
it. Got a lot of use.
Yes, that's the other thing. It was only one bathroom, so we had to go upstairs to use the bathroom because they were called flats in those days. They weren't proper apartments, right? You kind of still lived together.
So they had their own kitchen, but
yes.
your family, all 5 of you,
used
that
the
bathroom.
One bathroom on the second floor, which is 5x5. It was tiny with a claw tub.
And I just wonder how much hot water there was for
showers and baths.
Was there a shower?
Oh, no, a claw tub with the ring, you know, the old-fashioned ring. So there would have probably been a shower. I don't recall the curtain, but there must have been. Yeah. And then my dad, I remember, enclosed it, because in those days you didn't want claw tubs anymore. And today we're putting them back in.
Right, yeah.
So he couldn't afford to put the proper modern tub in, so he enclosed the claw tub.
Yeah.
In a box and tiled it and all that. It never looked right.
Yeah.
You did what you could, right?
What you could afford.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Did a lot of other families live that way?
All the families I knew lived that way. All of them.
So other people rented the second floor or the third.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's how people paid the mortgage.
That's right. That's how you paid the mortgage. They were all working class. It was an extremely working class neighborhood. It was not a neighborhood where you could leave your bicycle on the sidewalk because it disappeared. No, it did. It was high crime, jumping in people's backyards, stealing, and you know, my dad, because we're Maltese in Malta, collecting pigeons is a big thing. So my dad built we had a tiny backyard that's about 15x15. Anyways, he built a pigeon coop, and we had some racing pigeons.
Oh my God.
And some fantails. They were beautiful.
Fantails are another kind of.
Yeah, the tail opens up. They're show pigeons. One day they disappeared. Someone stole them. It was a very high crime. You couldn't leave anything anywhere. It was poor. People stole. You know, if you had a... this was a great story. My first bicycle, my dad couldn't afford us a bicycle. So in the laneway on... what's the name of the laneway now, Powell?
Albert Jackson.
Albert Jackson. A few of the very old Jewish men who first came here were junk men. In fact, one of them, I still remember him with a horse. But later on, he bought a truck. So I caught the tail end of him with a horse and a wagon. And he would travel the neighborhood and laneways picking up steel. He mostly collected steel, but the other ones collected other things. There were two or three down that laneway. The garages were just full to the brim with junk. And then they would sell it for the scrap metal. There were three of them that I remember. Anyways, he found a bike someplace and he restored it for me. And he welded. I remember one thing that was wrong with it was the pedal was broken, so he welded it, or had somebody weld it for me. And the first day I rode it, the pedal broke off. So he took me in his truck back to whatever garage. It might have been at this garage over here, and he re-welded it, and I had it for many years, this bicycle. But it was used,
yeah.
And this is what we had. Through him, because he was a really nice man, he was actually disabled, but he still was able to go up in the laneways and collect steel and all that. He put two kids through university. His son, one was a doctor, and I think the other might have been a lawyer. And this is how they all did it. And he owned three houses.
So they did menial, dirty, hard work.
Well, when they first came to... there was a lot of racism. When the Jewish people came from Poland, many came from Poland. Now, these are older than me. These came probably in the 30s. Boys of major, these kind of people. Many people wouldn't hire them because they were Jewish, right? Toronto was very snobby in many ways. It was very English, right? And if you didn't fit the bill, like... people who cook garlic, they used to say people who cook garlic.
And they were talking about the Jewish people?
Jewish or any immigrant.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. My mom was called a DP many times by them, and displaced person,
yeah.
Right? And there was a lot of racism here, so it was hard to get out of here. But they did whatever it took. Just like people who come from India and drive a cab, and many of those people are doctors and lawyers in their country, but they can't do it here. Right, and after the war, that's when many of the Jews came here too. At that point,
so they were willing to work hard,
whatever
to give their children, the next
exactly.
generation, a better life.
Exactly, exactly, right. So we were influenced by that too, right? Because you could see that, you know, if you work hard, you need 60 cents an hour, and the junk men weren't by the hour; it's whatever they sold, right? And
but their hands weren't clean.
No, they weren't. No, yeah. They weren't. There were people in Kensington Market that would collect clothes and sell used clothes at Kensington. I just still remember this as a kid. All the greengrocers, they're yelling and screaming at each other. They were mean, those people.
They were clawing their way out of poverty.
Well, they didn't, but their kids sure did.
Yeah.
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 And what's very funny, as soon as their kids acquired any wealth, they moved up Bathurst Street. That's where you went. You went up Bathurst Street.
I know that.
They went up Eglinton. It kept going further up.
Yeah, yeah.
And my dad wanted that, too. He wanted to move out of here because this was a neighborhood where you start. You don't live
here.
And
his association was when he was poor and when he
yes.
had nothing.
Yes.
But he never did move out.
No, because we couldn't give away the house, right? We were asking at the time about $18,000.
And what year was that?
About 1967, something like that. And we couldn't even give it away.
So they didn't want it around that
no,
time?
No, because at that time the suburbs were flourishing. So you went to Scarborough, you went to Mississauga.
And that was the good life.
Yes, or you went up Bathurst Street and you worked your way up, you know, Eglinton and Lawrence and up there. And that was the good life. You got out of here. This was the neighborhood for immigrants.
So your parents couldn't sell it.
And they stayed.
So they stayed.
They stayed, yeah.
Was that frustrating for your dad?
A little bit, yeah, because my dad would travel and he always wanted big houses on Hyde Park and, you know, he wanted the American dream, the Canadian
yeah.
dream, right? And we couldn't give it away, so we stayed.
And did your mother feel the same way?
My mom always loved this neighborhood.
She did. So
yeah.
they had a different opinion.
They had a different opinion.
Yeah.
My mom loved this neighborhood.
Yeah. I want to come back to this, the kind of work people did. Kind of dual-pronged question. One is... Were some of the women working, or all, or none? Was there any kind of home industry, people working from their homes?
Yes, a lot of the women would work either, Spadina was all seamstresses, and you know where they made all clothing was made there. A lot of them did piecework, and they would take the work from the factories and make it at home. That's called piecework. And, a good friend of mine, Doug Mutsumera, his mother did it, worked on Spadina. She never lived in this neighborhood. Anyways, she made, in those days, like $2,000 wedding dresses, and they would pay her $100 to make a dress. Right? He knows how to sew because of that. He used to help his mother.
Now, is that a Japanese name?
His name's Doug Mutsumera. No, he's Japanese.
Yeah,
yeah. But his parents came after the war, too. This is, you know,
okay.
they
but
came from all...
But he lived in this neighborhood?
No, he actually lived in another neighborhood.
Okay.
But his mother worked down there, too.
Yeah.
But a lot of the old Jewish people, that's... their wives...
So the women sometimes worked on Spadina.
Yeah.
And
they were in their sweatshops, basically. Yeah, they were.
So if the women were working, that was often where they
yes,
were working,
it's,
in these sweatshops.
It's sweatshops. It was... labor, basically, you know, you didn't, unskilled, I guess, would be, although they were
skilled,
but they were
yeah.
skilled, but that yeah. was considered unskilled. When you think of unskilled labor, still skilled. You still
sure.
have to know what it, you know.
So if the women were working, That's what a lot of them did.
A lot did that. Or they owned shops. Every corner was a shop of some sort, a variety store. Many of the corner buildings were Jewish owned. It was all Jewish, right? And they ran little variety stores or food shops, because a lot of it was
kosher. Let me come back just to one thing. So in terms of the women working, you're saying a number of them did, and they were sewing on Spadina.
Yes.
But the other part is some work at home. I guess that covers both, because if they were working piecemeal, sometimes they brought that home.
They brought it home, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. You didn't have to actually work there. Some actually never worked on Spadina. It would be piecemeal. So they worked from their homes. They, you know, you sewed and then you brought it and you sold the unit. Uh-huh. And you were paid very little for that. You know? Yeah.
Did your mother work outside of the home? Or she?
Oh, no, my mom actually always did work. So her first job when she came to the country was working at Simpsons as an elevator girl. She worked at Christie packing cookies, box place where they make boxes. Finally ending up, for a few years she did stay at home with us till we grew up. So, she did work a little bit at that point too, because we had Nana Spitzer looking after us. Uh-huh. She also did babysitting from home. That was a big industry too. So my mom, I do remember having two or three other kids in the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my mom did that too. Whatever it took.
So when she was at home, she took other children.
That's
in,
right. Yes.
And when she went to work, Nana
Spitzer. Or at that point, later on, she finally ended up working at Sir John Restaurant at Eaton's. She retired there.
Your mother.
Yeah, but at that point, when she was at Eaton's, we were already old enough to look after ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think, right? So many kids. This is the other thing. Parents did work, and the kids actually had, there were no nannies at home, you know, Filipino nannies in those days, so the kids were in the street. We all played in the street.
And had the doors were unlocked? The
front
door was unlocked?
Yeah, in the old days they would have been unlocked. Later on we started locking, right? The back door was always locked, because that's where people came in.
Came in through the lane.
Yeah, through the laneways, yeah, and hopping fences and that. And they weren't nice, clean laneways straight. The fences were all twisted, and, you know.
Neglected.
It was neglected, yeah. And the back of the houses were all neglected in those days. But we all played in the backyards, and the front was usually open. Later, like in the mid-70s, we started locking, and then you became
more. But you were all street kids. You were
all
playing
street
outside.
Kids, yes, yes. The story of the boys in major is the story till about the mid-70s, I'd say. I do remember playing Central Tech parking lot. That was our playground there, too. We used to ride our bikes in there. And a friend of mine lived on the house right behind it. They're renovating it right now. And we would grab his hose and fill it up in the winter and create a skating rink there.
Yeah.
We used to play streets against streets. So we were the Harbor Street gang, just like the boys. We were the Harbor Street gang. There was the Euclid gang and the Sussex gang. Now, we weren't gangs. We were a group of kids, and we'd play sports together, street hockey or baseball. And we used to play. Central Tech parking lot was a good one for that, because it was a big open space to play, you know, and you bring your own nets, you built your own hockey nets. And
at what age did children began to play outside?
I always remember being outside, so let's say I was 8 to 10, we started going out, and you always played outside. Well, there was no TV, there was no radio in those days, so you made friends, right? We hopped on bikes, and our playground was the city. I do remember riding through Central Tech. I mean, through UFT, and you just traveled. I read in the Toronto Star where we are so protective of our kids now. In the 1930s, like those people, it would have been this. It was a safety factor, right? And when we grew up, you stayed here. Now, your neighborhood's this, and your parents take you to hockey, and they organize everything for you. We had to organize
play dates.
Yes, play dates. And you know, that's all about the parents making sure that they're the right, you know. We didn't do that. We did our own organizing.
And the parents were working.
And they were working. They didn't have time for that. You know? And they had hard jobs. They would work, you know. You took as an immigrant, you took the worst job nobody else wanted, right? And then if you worked hard, maybe you would move up a little. My dad worked at the Park Plaza Hotel. His first job was cleaning the rooms. And there's a man there he's the bartender there. He's been there since 1957.
Whoa.
He was 18 years old. He's still the bartender there. He's Joe the bartender. He's famous. Everybody knows him. He's up in the rooftop restaurant up there. It's pretty high. It was always a high-end hotel, the Park Plaza. Anyways, that's where my dad worked.
But your dad was... he could also do a lot with wood.
Yes, yeah. My dad was always quite skilled. Mm-hmm. My mom's family is a construction family, too. Her grandfather built our home in Malta. We still have a house there. So he came with some skills, and my mom was always critical of what my dad was doing. Because my dad, he could build, but he was never careful, so doors would be crooked. It was typical of a European man, you know, they don't have time to just build it. My mom was very critical of what my dad would do. So later in life, when we could afford it more, my mom would start hiring people because she didn't want my dad doing it anymore.
First, at least he would get it done.
In the beginning, you had to. You just didn't have the money. Yeah, and you would always hire people from the neighborhood. Where the garage is now, where the fish and chips, there was a guy in there who was a cabinet maker later, too. At first, it was a fishmonger, I believe, or sausages or something, Jewish guy. Then, after that, it stayed empty for a while. No, a man lived in there. There used to be a bachelor who lived in there. It was a home. I don't know if there was even a bathroom in there. Anyways, a man lived in there. Later on, there was a small cabinet maker, and he built our first kitchens at my mom's place and my dad's parents' place. Trying to think what else happened there.
But your dad started working at a hotel cleaning rooms.
Yes, yeah.
And then what did he do beyond?
After that, he got a job at Villarreal, CN, and then Villarreal. So then that's where he retired. He worked there. That was a good job for an immigrant. That's a good job.
And what was he doing?
He first started cleaning the trains. The passenger cars. Later on, he became a carman, which is basically a mechanic, but he didn't like that because a lot of the work was outside. So he actually went back to a cleaner, a train cleaner. The pay was the same, it didn't matter because you're unionized at that point. Mm-hmm. So that's what he retired. We actually did pack up my mom packed up the family in 1968, I believe it was, and we lived in California for 1 year.
Whoa, yeah. Where?
San Francisco. So we were in San Francisco in 1969, Haight Ashbury days.
I lived in Palo Alto, which is close by, from 1964 to 68.
Oh, okay.
I was there at the same time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
what a wonderful time.
Well, it was. As a kid, I didn't think it was that wonderful because we lived in my uncle's basement because we just moved in there. We stayed there for a year. My dad loved it, didn't want to come back. And my mom, we rented this house to some Native Indians who destroyed it. But anyways.
But it was just an adventure? What was that?
No, like? We went there to live. And the house was up for sale. We had our lawyer. He was supposed to be selling it on us. Well, he wasn't even taking care of anything. We never got rent or anything.
Oh.
After a year, my mom got tired of San Francisco and said, told my dad, I'm taking the kids. I'm coming back to Toronto. If you want to come, great. Because my dad loved it. He didn't want to come. My dad did come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we came back. So we were only
to that house.
That house, yeah. It was destroyed. Oh. I do remember the first day we came back. We had no beds and we slept on... we had rugs in those days. There was hardwood underneath, but the rugs were all burnt with cigarettes. So it was a disaster. And then the next day when we came back, we went to Eaton's and bought new beds.
They never paid rent that whole year?
No.
So your parents were out a lot of money.
A lot of money, yes.
Well, that was a hard time.
Yeah, it really was.
So coming back from a year that your mother was not happy,
yes,
to this disaster of their property that they worked so hard to pay for.
That's right. Yeah. But it was a different time. And nobody wanted to live in this neighborhood either at that point, right? So when you rent it to whoever you could find it. Yeah. It was a bad mistake. Yeah. And we left it to a lawyer to look after it. And
Parents had to fix it up at their own expense, of course.
Yeah. It was destroyed. They broke the kitchen. They broke everything.
That's a sad story.
Yeah. But, renter beware, I guess. Yeah.
You began to talk about the stores in the neighborhood.
Right.
Now, you lived on Harvard, so
yes.
I assume that you knew the stores there best.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you said that your parents... The social life was more on college.
Yes, because Bloor Street was all Hungarian, because in 1957, all the Hungarians settled on Bloor. So there's one Hungarian restaurant there still. But
Country style.
Yes, yeah. But it was all Hungarian in those days. In 1957, that's where they settled. They were smart and bought all the big houses up in the annex, converted them all to rooming houses. When I say rooming houses, I mean rooming houses, like the worst for the rubbies,
So the Hungarian people
ran
away.
Yes,
it was the Hungarian Revolution.
Yeah, and they settled there. That was the neighborhood they settled in. College Street was still, I think, a lot of Jewish, although there was a little block of Germans, too. There's one old lady there. She still sells clothes.
Yes.
Yes. She's German. She's probably.
And there's the German church there.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah. So there was a small German community down in that area.
Near Bathurst. That's right. East of Bathurst.
Yeah. But college was always mixed. There was all kind of people down there. It was the Grander Street. It always was the Grander Street. The subway made Bloor Street what it is. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the students started the restaurants and all that.
So the nature of the stores changed a lot.
Yes.
Because you described... you started to talk about corner stores.
Yes. You know where the BQ, the restaurant with the French doors there? The white one at Harvard and Brunswick? That has the big French door. It's a DQ Bistro or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, that was Budapest Bakery. That was a bakery. He was Hungarian, and he owned properties on Bloor Street. He owned half a block up there, and so that was a bakery before. They used to cook bread there. It was called the Budapest Bakery, and an interesting story with him was he was older in his 50s, and he went back to Hungary and married a beautiful Hungarian woman. She was like 17 when he married her, and my mother used to say how beautiful she was.
Oh.
Well, he passed away. He was much older. And she acquired all this property. She died a millionaire. And many people actually got quite wealthy in this, because they worked hard. It was not through acquisitions or through... it was through hard work.
Very, very hard work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come back to your childhood, please.
Yes.
And you talked about the kids were on their own.
Yes, yes.
But before when you were showing me your beautiful home, you talked about playing in the lanes.
Yes.
So please talk about that.
Well, there weren't any playgrounds. Very little green space in this area. Even today, there was very little. So our parks, our playgrounds were the laneways. And we all played in the laneways. And like I was telling you, there were different we were gangs, but we weren't gangs. We were boys, Mostly boys. I don't know what the girls used to do. It was mostly boys. I guess the girls stayed at home. I'm not sure. I do remember the boys.
Yeah.
And there was the Sussex Street gang. We were the Harvard Street gang. There was the Ulster Street gang. And we all played in the parks. One thing we used to like to do was in the fall collect chestnuts. Now, this is a real boy thing.
Okay.
Yes, and you would throw sticks up into the chestnut trees,
uh-huh.
and you'd knock down the chestnuts, and all of the streets would collect these. All the boys would collect these, and we would collect thousands of them.
What would you do with them?
I don't know. You didn't eat them. You just collected
them.
You can't. They're poisonous.
And you didn't necessarily throw them either.
No.
But you
no.
collected them.
We collected them. Yes, all the kids would, all the boys would collect them.
Uh-huh.
And
did you kind of collect them competitively? We have a bigger pile than you.
Yes, actually that was it. And I was pretty good at organizing this. So we would have crews that send out two or three, and we go on that street and collect the chestnuts. And you were supposed to go on somebody else's street and take their chestnuts, but they had better treats. Right?
So you did.
But we also had one boy, he lived right behind the laundry. Jack was his name, he was Portuguese. And he was like a little monkey, and he could climb the trees. The rest of us would throw sticks, and then we started getting really... We destroyed the trees as kids with strings, and you pull the branches shake them up. But then Jack, he had no fear of heights, so he could climb up the trees and shake the branches, right? So we actually were probably better than the other kids at collecting them.
He was part of the Harvard Street gang.
Yeah, he was part of the Harvard Street gang.
So he was a valued member.
Yeah, yes, he was. And then I was always a bit of a carpenter, so I built a box and we'd collect these chestnuts. And I do remember one of the other street kids' gangs came and stole our chestnuts. I do remember that. Now, a friend of mine, my brother-in-law actually from Oakville tells similar stories that then he's exactly my age collecting chestnuts in Oakville. So it's something I think all kids of that era did. I don't know why we used to collect these. You can't eat them. Squirrels eat them.
Well, there was an older man that I spoke to, and they got chestnuts and
you
collected them to it. That's right.
Drill a hole, yes, and you would make necklaces out of it.
Or else just use it to swing and hit other people.
Yeah, that's right. It was a little bit violent. It wasn't like, knives and stuff, but there were fights and laneways and that. And you had your territories. Yeah.
What were some of the games you played in the lanes?
Okay, I do remember that we would play... Jacks was one of them, where you collect the thing. But the other one was a thing called Battling Tops. All the kids knew how to do this, and there was a wooden top, you tie a string around it, and you throw it, but the idea of this game was to crack the other kid's top. It was a competition, right? I don't see kids playing this anymore, and we used to play it in the playgrounds and in the schoolyard, too. Schoolyards weren't grass in those days, they were pavements.
And were the back lanes all paved?
No, they were dirt. They got paved mid-70s, I'd say. No, they were dirt
so
and gravel.
So when you were playing there as a child, it was muddy if it was raining or dirtier.
It was like limestone screening. Yeah. I don't remember mud, but they weren't paved. Not all of them were paved. That came in later, that they were paved. I do remember like gravel and, you know. Yeah. So they could be a bit muddy, I guess. Yeah. I don't remember mud, but I do remember gravel. Yeah. You know, because I'm trying to remember my child, you know, when you're younger. You'd hop on your bike, and they're all interconnected, these, so you can travel. We rarely traveled up and down the streets, but through the laneways. Yeah,
so
they were
a good place for you as a child.
And I got to be totally honest. I wasn't totally honest. Honestly, we did some thefts, too. We would go into people's yards and take things, too, right?
Objects.
You did what other people did, you know. Parents couldn't buy you. We used to get one Christmas gift a year. Dad would take us to Eaton's, and we got whatever we wanted, but it was one.
Yes.
It's not like today.
Yeah.
So if you left a bike out or that metal car, boy, that car was our prize. So that went in the house in our room, because I would have disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I used to jump fences and take things too. I wasn't a saint.
Yeah. But you're saying that was kind of the culture of the time.
It was the culture.
People
of the
didn't
time.
Have much, and if something was valuable, you brought it into your house.
You took it. Yes. Everybody did it.
So it was petty crime.
Yeah, it was.
I mean,
not breaking into houses or cars.
But if it was left outside,
if you left something,
a public property.
That's right. Like they park here at the corner. Now, what is the name? Margaret
Fairley.
Okay, if you notice, people leave little toys out there. You never did that in those days.
Yeah, I think they leave those and they don't want them. I think when their kids have grown up and they don't want to use them
anymore. Yeah, but it stays in the park and it gets used by everybody.
Yeah.
Not when we were growing up. That would have disappeared.
So you're saying it was a different socioeconomic situation.
It was all...
And people were deprived and poor.
Yeah. And you did what you could, right?
Yeah.
So you didn't leave anything out.
Yeah. Not if you wanted it the next day.
Yeah, that's right. Trying to think of some of the other games we would have played. Well, there was a lot of sword fighting. I do remember that with sticks.
But with sticks.
Yeah, with sticks. No, with sticks.
When you reached 15, 16, 17... What was the situation in terms of dating, socializing with girls?
Well, I do remember that I had some friends in that age in here, but I went to Central Tech, which was primarily a boys' school. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember much dating, because with immigrant parents, there's no dating, you know what I mean? And the parents, even Portuguese, at that point it was starting to become Portuguese, the Jewish people had moved on. It was Portuguese and Italian here. No, and you did not date their daughters.
They put a lock on their daughters.
Pretty well. Yeah. You hardly ever saw it. That's what I was telling you. I didn't see any girls in the street, because you just didn't go out much as a girl, right? And they did, because they would arrange marriages. See, we were Maltese. We were brought up different, right? But Italian and Portuguese, they're arranged marriages. 17, I do remember Portuguese pulling their kids out of high school to go to work with dad, and arranged marriages. By 18, the girl was married. Right? So there was no dating, no. I don't remember too many girls in the streets. And like I said, the Jewish had moved on by then. So this was is starting to become Portuguese and Italian neighborhood.
Sure, and they were new immigrants, so
they were
much more protective and more old world.
Exactly. And they did not come from the best parts of Europe. So the Italians would have come from Sicily, and the Portuguese would have come from the Azores. They did not come from Lisbon, where they were more cultured. These were the peasants of their countries, right? And they, very protective. It's very old world. I do remember my friend Rui and Jack, the monkey guy. Well, he's a doctor and he's an engineer. They were brought up different, because he came from Lisbon. And I really liked his sister, but his sister was the genius in the school, and it was all about education for them. So there was
no
dating.
So if you were going to Central Tech, you weren't going to get close
to
it.
No. Although Rui and Jack did go to Central Tech, and he finished top of his class. And like I said, he's a doctor in the neighborhood. No. They finished top. So I was inspired by education through them in many ways, too. But Saturday for them was Portuguese school, and Sunday was Sunday school. So there was no playing much out with them. There were other kids that I started, you know, hanging out with. I didn't go to Saturday school and all that. But I was inspired by them. And I never finished top of my class, but I actually was always honor roll, too.
And so you were a good student. Well,
yeah, I tried to be.
Well, and your parents said you're going to go to university.
I'm going to university. Now, his parents, you're going to be top of your class. It was a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah.
And they did. They were great. When they moved, so when they didn't play much. So there were Italians. I do remember a Newfie kid with a broken arm. He used to hit everybody in the head with it.
Is this Cast?
Yes, I do remember him. He wasn't in the neighborhood too long. He lived in this awful apartment building right in front of the track at Bathurst and Harbert on the south side. There's that awful long building. There's a studio in there.
Yeah.
That was an awful building. I do remember another Newfie family always fighting and drinking, and that was at the Sussex. It was on Sussex. There were some really rough people in the neighborhood too.
So these were poor people.
Oh, it was very poor. I don't remember welfare people, but I do remember very poor people. You know, my parents always tried to do a little bit better than that. They tried, right? But they were poor too.
For sure.
They never owned a car.
Jobs.
Yeah. It was, but you did whatever you could for your kids. But some families never did. And Portuguese were famous for pulling their kids out of school. Right? And you go work with Dad. And Dad worked in construction. And in fact, the guy who's working here, he lives in Oakville. But I think he pulled this kid out of school, too. They still do that.
They pulled their kids out of school, and they married their daughters off.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was very old world, because they come from the poorer parts of their countries. That's why you leave, right? Now, my mother did not leave Malta because it was poor. My mother hated the heat. Yeah, she was, for Maltese was weird, but she was a redhead.
Oh.
Yeah, very fair skin. She hated the heat. She came here because...
So she would have really been... She would have suffered from the heat.
Yes, so that's why she came here. Yeah.
But she came with no family at all.
No.
So that must have caused some hardship, homesick, isolation.
I think so, because she didn't have... But she did keep in touch with the letters in those days. I remember the airmail letters.
Yeah,
I do remember her writing them.
Yeah.
She always wrote in English because everybody speaks English. So I do remember reading that for her. My dad didn't want to come here. My dad, it's a funny story with him, but he followed his friend to Australia. Any British colony, Maltese can go because we're built in British colony. So he went to Australia, lived there for 3 years. And I don't know what happened, but he came back to Malta. But he couldn't afford to come back, so he was a stowaway on the boat, and they caught him.
Wow. Oh.
So they said to him that he had to pay his fare one way or another, and the one way was that they were looking for workers in those days in Canada, and he agreed to come here, and he worked the tobacco fields for a while, and then he finally worked his way to Toronto, and that's how he ended up on Bathurst Street. But he never really wanted to be here. He always wanted to go back, and once he married
to Australia.
No, to Malta.
To Malta.
Yeah. So my dad never really liked the cold. He loved the heat, so it was a funny...
Well, your parents were quite different.
They were very different, yeah. Oh. Where my mom always said that it must have been God who grabbed her by her hair and brought her here. She always loved Canada.
Well, and of course that acted itself out at home when she lowered the heat.
Yes, that's it, yeah.
What about Kensington Market?
Okay, I do remember, one of the first childhood memories was we had a rabbit as a pet. So my mom would take us down there with a shopping cart, and we'd go to the Green Grocers there, the corner ones. There's one that sells burritos now, and the other side's a restaurant. Well, they were at the corner of Cecil and Augusta. They were all Green Grocers there, and they were really mean Jewish men. I do remember this, yelling and screaming. But my mom would force us to go get the lettuce leaves because they would rip the outside lettuce, to make
and
them
throw
work.
It away.
And throw it away. So we would fill this shopping cart full of lettuce leaves for our rabbit. I do remember, that was our first childhood memory. I do remember seeing all the pigeons in cages, live pigeons, because you buy the chickens and pigeons live for cooking, I guess. And they were being cages. I mean, it was a dirty place.
So people, they sold pigeons too. I knew about the chickens. I didn't know.
No, they sold pigeons too. Yeah.
And
quails. I do remember quails.
So people brought them home alive and killed them.
That's right. Yeah.
Or the Jewish ones would have the guy kill them
kosher,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Although there were a few people on Kensington would do the kosher
killing
also. Yeah. I do remember the guy selling eggs. There were two or three sold eggs, and I guess they would have been the chicken. I don't remember chickens in front of that. There was always eggs. And I guess they're kosher eggs, too. I guess there's a certain...
I don't know if they're kosher eggs.
Yeah, but I do remember everybody down there was Jewish. It was all...
It was really a Jewish market.
Yeah,
that
it time. Really was. And they were mean. I remember always yelling at people.
Yelling at each other
and at the people. Yeah, because you bartered, right? You know, if a lettuce, you know, it was, I don't know, 10 cents in those days, my mom would say 5 cents, and a lot of bartering. But as a child, they were yelling. Right? Yeah. They were bartering.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But he did used to yell at the kids, right? But he would let us take the carrots, or bad carrots, or the
and that was
lettuce
for, your rabbit.
For a rabbit. Yeah, we had a big, huge white rabbit. We kept it in that little shed, too.
So it didn't come into the house.
No. And he was huge.
Did it have a name?
Yes, I think Peanut. Because he kind of looked like a peanut,
yes,
I think.
Yeah. You're saying that your family used Kensington Market?
All the time. That's my mom shopped there a lot. And if we didn't go there, we used to go to the Dominion, which is Metro now. And I do remember going there, too, with my mom. With the shopping cart, we always had. Yeah. Later in life, we call them granny carts, but we always used that. I do remember that. A lot of the shopping was at Kensington. Yeah, we'd go with mom there. Although, as children, we hated it.
The market.
Yeah, we hated it. I didn't like going down there.
Because it was noisy.
And the men were mean.
Yeah.
They were yelling, but it's a hard life.
Yeah.
Right?
So did you feel a little scared?
Yeah, you're a little bit scared when you're a younger kid. And we did not like going there. I do remember that. We used to like going to Metro or Dominion, where it was clean. Where the record store, where Anastasia's at the corner, that used to be a Loblaws there many years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, they sell records now in that location. That was a Loblaws there. He left there in the 60s, I believe.
A long time ago.
And I do remember the Loblaws was dirty, where Dominion was a nice clean store.
I don't know, on Harvard, did you have anything behind the house, a piece of property, or was it...
A
back lane.
No, it's a right of way.
Didn't have a back.
No, our garden was 15 by 15 if we're lucky, and that was our backyard. So that's why a few of the kids played in the backyards because they were small and they were always full of junk too. I do remember junk in the backyard. Everybody had junk in the backyard because the houses
didn't have storage. So
that's
that
right.
That's
right.
Better.
Yeah. Or they rented their garages, a lot of people, too, right? Like, some of the junk men actually didn't live in those houses. They would have rented a series of garages and filled them full of stuff, right? So they didn't actually own all their garages, either. So you played in the street. That's where you played. You know?
Happily,
that's right.
You didn't feel like deprived kids.
No,
you were kids.
It's what you
did.
What you did.
Yeah. You did talk about a kind of class structure. Mm-hmm. How do you see things of having changed since 1961 when you began to live here? What is it like today?
Well, a funny story is that when my parents first moved in, everybody was an immigrant, okay? They were all at the same class. They all had lousy jobs or self-employed and little lousy businesses, right? That's what it was. Mid-70s, this neighborhood started getting gentrified, right? And people started buying up these houses, and they paid very little for them, like $35,000, $25,000. And they started doing a little bit of renovations. But they started taking over in many ways, creating new rules for themselves. You know, they were more educated. All of them were university educated. They were moving back into the core. And my mom always felt that these people were taking away her neighborhood. Yeah. Now, when we renovated this house, we had a big problem with our neighbor. And she said, "You're a very bad neighborhood. You're changing the feeling of the neighborhood." And I said, "You know what? That's what my mother felt like when you people moved in." So, you know, that's the evolution of a neighborhood.
Change is part of life.
Exactly.
But you kept your facade.
No, we will never change the facade for two reasons. I love the old... these are sun-baked brick. The orange brick is sun-baked. Second is you devalue your property. If we had to change that facade, we would devalue this property completely. You can do whatever you want to the interior, but if you touch the facade, I think it's a huge mistake. So there was never a plan to even do that. Mm-hmm. My mom was one of the first to take the paint. All the houses were painted in this area. And the reason for that was the brick became dirty. And in those days, they didn't know how to clean brick, or if they did, it was very expensive. So they used to paint the houses. If you notice, many of them are red. Well, they were all red at one time. My mom in the mid-70s was one of the first to find a person who could chemically clean the brick and hers was one of the first ones to be brought back to its...
Yes, that was very early.
Yeah, it was in the mid-70s. Yeah, we were kind of trendsetters in that respect in many ways. But before that, she was one of the first to paint it a different color than red. Ours was gray or silver.
So she removed the old paint and put gray paint on.
Yeah, well, the old paint you couldn't remove because red paint is one of the hardest colors and it seeped into the brick.
Destroyed the brick.
Yeah, in effect, Dr. Bingham destroyed the brick on this house because he sandblasted it. That was a trend in those days. He took up the outer glaze off and we have to do something about it now, seal it or something. He's destroyed the brick. My mother was a person, she found an Englishman who, in England, it's all brick homes, and he was able to chemically do it. And now they use a pressure system, but in those days it was a caustic.
She was a clever woman.
Yeah, my mom was actually very clever. Yeah.
Yeah.
No education because of the war, just like many Europeans. She only had up to grade 6. My dad, I think, had grade 6 also.
So your parents can both read?
Yes. Read and write, yeah. My mom is very eloquent. I found some notes. She keeps journals when she went on vacation. I was surprised with no education how well she wrote. You know,
so she wasn't educated, but she was intelligent.
Yeah, but you know what? Most of the people in this neighborhood were that. They were extremely intelligent, mm-hmm. just no education. And because they had no education, they couldn't do better in society.
They didn't have the opportunity.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. They couldn't go to university. Yeah. And like I said, Last Man and Spider-Man and Ed Mermish all grew up in this neighborhood. Right? And they were entrepreneurs. And there was that entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, I guess they didn't want to live the way their parents had lived.
Exactly. And they did very well, and their kids did even better.
Yeah.
But they all went to Harvard Collegiate. That I do remember, and I didn't go there.
What did that feel like at that time for you?
Well, my friends all went to Central Tech, except for a few who did go to Harvard Collegiate. But I thought it was fine. It's where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. My parents did ask me if I wanted to go to St. Mike's, because we went to a Catholic school. So St. Peter's was up to grade 6, and then we had to go to a middle school, which was St. Lucie's, which was Clinton College. We used to walk, and I do remember how rough that was, because there was, at that side of Bathurst, it was a bully gang, and this kid used to beat us up and all that. I do remember that. Yeah. Oh, and there was another thing that we used to do. You know where the theater is? Sussex and Bloor, the church that's a theater? They did the Fringe Festival there. It's a big white church.
Yes.
Well, in the basement of that was the Kiwanis Club. And it was a club that was free for all the kids, and it got the kids off the street. And they'd go down there, and it was a rough environment, but we all went there. And they have a gym. They used to have a gym down there. I don't know what's down there. Craft room, which I loved. I used to be in the craft room all the time because that's what I liked. Mm-hmm. And there was another room in there, and I think there was ping pong in that. And there'd be hundreds of kids down there after school. So this was another way. There was a babysitting. So from 3 o'clock or 2:30 or so till about 5 o'clock, all the kids went to that church, and it was free of charge to use it. It was called the Kiwanis Club. And, you know, I think they're still around, the Kiwanis, but it was a rough environment. I do remember they had a monkey bar thing in the gym, in the corner of the gym. It was a huge gym down there. And one of my friends, Portuguese guy who lived on Ulster, Joe, went up in the monkey bars, and there was one kid up there. We all knew him as the neighborhood bully, and I said, don't go up there.
Mm-mm.
And he wouldn't listen to me, so he went up there and he came down back with a broken tooth. And I said to him, Joe, I told you not to go up there, because you know which kids were the kids you didn't go near.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a way of getting the kids off the street.
Fabulous.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Kiwanis Club supported all that.
Yeah, it did support
Excellent.
It. Yeah.
Excellent.
I do remember reading week, you know, they would have a week activity where it went from 9 o'clock to about 5. So the kids weren't in the street. We were at the Kiwanis for that whole week, and they had prizes and lunch, and they had all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
because they knew this was a working class neighborhood.
That's right, and
these kids some structure.
That's right. Yeah, and they did. Yeah, because they would have counselors there to taught you different games, basketball, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. So I do remember spending a lot of my time at the Kiwanis there also.
What about the JCC at Lawrence Medina?
That, I don't remember much about
that. So you didn't
use that? No, I never did use that. Mm-hmm. At St. Peter's Church in the basement was also the Cubs, and my mom got us involved in the Cubs. So that we didn't like that because I was a moneymaker for them. They would send you in the neighborhood trying to sell apples, and in those days they were a quarter each. And if you didn't sell enough apples...
Expensive.
Yeah, I know. You had to polish them and go door to door knocking on selling apples. So... I remember the camp leader, the cub leader, complained to my mom that we weren't selling enough apples. And my mom said enough of that, and she pulled us out of there. And then we went to Kiwanis full time. Now, the JCC,
it wasn't part of your life.
I don't remember that part of my life.
Yeah. You didn't use it.
I
think we've covered pretty much everything. In terms of safety and security, you said you guys as kids, everybody was poor, everybody took what wasn't chained down.
Yes.
How do you feel about the safety of our neighborhood now?
I think it's as safe as it ever was. I think it might be safer. You know, there's this idea of that, you know, now you have to watch your children. See, the whole idea of building the family room in the kitchen is to watch your children, because if they don't, they might explode. There's this sense that you have to protect your kids from everything now, where I don't think there's any more strange people now than there ever was. I do remember there was the Moran murder. They found the girl in the freezer. I don't know if you remember that case. Well, I would have been a child at that time. So things did happen in those days also. I don't hear about that stuff happening now either. So I don't think it's any more dangerous than it was then.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think the media,
yeah,
we all, anything bad that happens, we learn about it.
Yeah. I walk day and night here. My wife walks day and night, and we never feel unsafe, ever. I don't feel unsafe in any part of Toronto unless I'm going into Regent Park or something. And even there, now they've gentrified that. I don't even feel unsafe there.
Yeah.
We're not New York City. We're not Buffalo, you know. Oh, this is an interesting thing. Yeah, I should tell you this, but when my parents first came to the country, there was nothing to do in Toronto at night. Everything closed down by 10 o'clock. Saturday and Sunday, especially Sunday, there was really nothing to do. So they would hop in cars and go to Buffalo. Buffalo is where you went to have fun.
Okay.
Yeah, because Buffalo, you could stay out at night and drink and go to restaurants. Toronto was very conservative. I do remember going with my dad to the liquor store and trying to think where it was. It was on Bloor Street, I believe, someplace, unless it was in college. I was a young child. And when you ordered liquor through a catalog like this, and my dad would write down the name of the alcohol you wanted. You'd put it through a little window, and a bottle would come out in a paper bag like you were doing something illegal. And it was the LCBO. It's the way it was done. And the idea of these modern stores, and you could pick, and it was very conservative. And if you bought alcohol, it was like you were doing something illegal. I do remember that. My dad would go and he'd buy the 5-star because it was a little bit cheaper than Crown Royal or whatever. But he'd write it on a note.
It looks very clandestine.
Yes, yes.
Well, I grew up in Montreal. I wasn't in Toronto until I moved here as an adult. And I remember we used to say about Toronto, they pull in the sidewalks at 10 o'clock at night.
Yes, and it was like that.
And this was, but I had never been here. It was just a Montreal expression.
Yeah, so they would go to Buffalo. Buffalo
for
was
fun.
Yeah, it was the big, because Toronto was, Montreal was the big city in those days. Toronto was, you know.
So there was a little bit of action on college nearby.
Or you would go to Yonge and Dundas, and there was the Brown Derby. I have a pamphlet from it somewhere in there.
Uh-huh.
There were some very nice blues nightclubs where you went dinner show kind of places.
Uh-huh.
There was the Palace Pier in those days. It's got long gone and burned down. There was the other one there. They renovated. It's just south there. And there was another place you would go dance. It actually has a sprung floor. It's right on the water. I forget the name of the place now. It's right in front of St. Joseph's Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, you would go to these places for fun too. But college and Spadina was, but Yonge and Dundas was the other place you would go for these places for entertainment, you know, nightclubs and that. There was very little of that, but it's not like today, a restaurant at every corner, right?
Right.
You also went to hotels if you wanted a nice meal, the Royal York, the King Getty, Park Plaza, because that's where the fine dining was. It wasn't at your neighborhood restaurant. There weren't any. You know, even Paretta wasn't there in those days.
Well, and we're so close to Harbert here.
Yeah.
And you grew up on Harbert.
Harbert was bad for business in those days.
So I want you to just, for a minute or two, talk about Harbert Street as it was and what has evolved.
It was basically residential in those days with storefronts in the corner. And there were corner stores, variety stores, fishmongers. This was a fishmonger here. The garage was always there. Where the sushi restaurant is at Robert, that was Jack's Variety. He was in the army. He was the meanest man in the world.
Oh.
I was talking to somebody else at the Lane party here when we had the unveiling, and he told me, oh yeah, Jack's, if you got him in a good day, he was great. If you did, he yelled at you. But he was that kind of thing. There weren't any restaurants, that's for sure. The bakery was always there, but we used to go there because of
bakery, fish.
Yeah, Budapest Bakery, more bread, rye bread. what else would have been? Greengrocers, a bit of vegetables.
Stores.
But yeah, if you really wanted good vegetables, you went to Kensington, because that's where they had a larger supply.
And how would you describe Harvard Street now?
Oh, it's great. I think it's a great street. A lot busier. When I got my first car, I used to park it in front of the house day and night. You could. Then they put in the meters, and now you can't even find a parking spot. There was no bicycling, so it was a streetcar down the center. I do remember that, shaking up the whole house when it drove by.
Oh, so that wasn't very... So that means there were tracks there,
There were
too.
Tracks, yeah. In fact, I think the tracks might be still under, because I remember as a kid sitting on the veranda, and they just paved over. They never removed them. I think they're still under the pavement there. So I do remember the streetcar. And then the bus came in 70 or something like that. It was... Herbert Street was residential for the most part. I do remember people sitting and talking, and people lived in the houses. Now, for the most part, on this strip anyways, it's retail or restaurants. People didn't go to restaurants either. You didn't have the money. You entertained at home, right? This is the way you did it. My wife's family are Polish, working class, exact same thing. In fact, her mother worked at the Park Plaza too as a cleaning lady. Yeah. So she thinks, my dad passed away, so I can't ask him, but she thinks she might know Joe, the bartender, who's still there. He's been there 50 years. Yeah. He's an interesting man.
Each of you had a parent working there.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, she was the cleaning lady at the Park Plaza, too. No, the Hyatt, of course. No.
So these parents worked hard, and they did offer their children a better life.
Yes, they did.
Which would have given them satisfaction.
Oh, yeah. But the other thing you did when you came as an immigrant in those, even today, I guess, your first purchase was a house. That's why you came here. Right? So it doesn't matter how junky the house was. You bought a house. Then you moved up, right? So my parents bought a house within 3 years. That's what you did. And then you put in tenants to help pay it. And that's how you did it.
It was a very common story.
Yes. If you were some people with family, you would fill the house full of family, and then once they paid that one off, they'd buy another, and then the family would spread. So there were many Portuguese and Italians in this area that lived next door to each other or near each other. For that reason, they would buy and help each other, and they would pay it that way. The Casa family, which live on Brunswick, they own they passed away now because I used to rent a garage from one, but they own 4 or 5 houses that way.
There are 2 families on my street on Borden, Portuguese, and one owns 2 homes, one owns 3 homes.
Yes.
And they bought them for 12, 15, 20, and now they're worth 700,000.
Yeah, but that's not why they bought them. It's just that's why you came to this country. Yeah. You bought a house.
You bought a house and created some security.
That's right. That's right, because house is security. Right?
Yeah. And nobody's going to kick you out of the house that you own, as long as you pay up and you filled your house with lots of bodies.
And, you know, and renovations, no one did renovations like this in those days.
Yeah.
You fix a crack in the wall. And my dad was the first. I remember him taking off the wall between the dining room and the living room. My mother was yelling at him, and my dad did it. And now everybody does it. Yeah. So he was kind of a trendsetter.
He sounded like a man who enjoyed some adventure.
He did.
San Francisco. I want to stay
here. Yeah. Because there weren't any parks, I remember Dad putting us on the bus or the subway. Really, I don't even remember as a kid taking the subway. And we'd go to Riverdale Zoo. There was a little zoo. It's an animal petting farm.
Yes.
Or we'd go to High Park in the petting zoo over there. Or we'd go to Sunnyside, or Center Island was a big one for us. Because there wasn't any green space. And you did not go to... no one owned cottages. Later on, they started buying cottages, these people. But no one owned cottages. And very few had cars, I do remember. So you went to these kind of day trips. And in fact, that hasn't changed the new immigrants. If you go down to Center Island, it's full of immigrants. It's the same thing.
I know
changed.
That when my husband and I occasionally walk on the boardwalk.
Yes.
A lot of the people I know are at their cottages.
Yes, yeah.
And it's the immigrants.
It's the immigrants because they don't have cottages. Yeah. And in fact, a lot of the young people like us are abandoning their cottages because traffic is getting so bad to get up there now. Who needs that hassle? Once you're up there, it's beautiful. But coming up to 400 and that, so...
Unless they just take a 4-day weekend every week.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Or you stay till Monday and then you come in Monday. But if you talk to the people coming back into this neighborhood, they're all coming. A lot of them are Jewish people whose grandparents lived on this street or lived on that. If you talk to them, you'll get these stories. They're all coming back. And it's walkability. It's very important.
I love that about it.
Yeah, but that's what it was before. It was always walkability because no one had cars. So you worked in the neighborhood, you shopped in the neighborhood. We're going back to that.
Well, I see it as downtown living,
yes,
but not all the concrete that you would have at
yeah.
Bay and Dundas.
Exactly.
Like that.
It's a neighborhood.
It's a neighborhood, and I,
yeah.
we open our windows at night,
yeah.
and it's quiet,
that's
and we enjoy
yeah, yeah.
city living, and as you say, walking, biking.
Yeah, yeah, and nothing has changed, except the people do have more money, that's for sure.
So this
yeah.
neighborhood has changed. It,
it started in the mid-70s when it started becoming gentrified. That's when we saw money starting to come in. And education, too. They were all, the people who were coming back were university. And now they're doctors and lawyers and engineers. It's even more high-end than that. It was the professors and the U of T people were buying these up. Or people turning into student housing. If you notice, there's less and less of that, thank God.
Yeah.
It was just partying.
And,
it, you
and
know.
Pouring it onto the street at 1:30
yeah.
in the morning.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But before that, it was rooming immigrants. Then the students came. That came in the 70s. But it used to be all immigrants here. It was different. You know, the university people weren't living here either. I don't remember students.
But,
in those
but
days.
There were the, what you described were the waves of it.
Yes.
Because as people did better then.
They
Thanks
got,
a lot.
They
I'm
got
going
out
north.
It was yeah. not a destination that you wanted to stay. It was a destination where you started out. Now it's a destination where you come back. Things have really changed, right?
Well, your home is a perfect
yeah.
example.
Well, I remember going to Yorkville as a kid, and it was a dump. Look at it now. It's some of the most valuable property.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, we spent a lot of time in Christie Pits, too. And we go to, because that was one of the bigger parks in the neighborhood. It's the closest big park, except for U of T, which is not really a park. So we went to Christie Pits a lot, and tobogganing on the hill.
So that was a nice natural place to
yes,
get your toboggan.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and it's a short walk. It
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
far.
Yeah.
You know? So Christie Pits was, you didn't want to go to Bickford Park, but
that's different.
Yeah, Bickford Park, I mean the school there. The park even wasn't that good on the south. We never went there. But that school was, if you went to Central Tech, that was the school for dummies. That was the two-year program there. Yeah, you left with a certificate. So if you ended up at Bickford Park as kids, we knew you didn't want to go there.
So
you did well
student.
Enough. You did well
yeah.
enough that you at least went to Central Tech.
Yeah, yeah.
If you did very well, then you go to Harvard Collegiate or Jarvis. Yeah. But I was interested in technology, so that was the perfect destination.
So each school had its own reputation.
Yes, that's right.
And status.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
And I do remember getting a car that, as a boy in those days, see, things have changed now, but when you were 16, you got a part-time job, and the first thing you did was buy a car, because car was freedom. And then we would travel
and
to...
And status.
And status, that's
yeah.
right. Yeah, and you, it's not like today mom and dad would buy you a brand new car. You had any piece of junk, I had a $500 car, you know.
So you did buy yourself a car at
yes.
16 years old?
I was 16. I had a part. I always worked. My first job was I was a canvasser for the Globe and Mail in the neighborhood here. But my mom didn't want me doing that anymore because the canvassing wasn't bad, but it was door-to-door, and she was a little bit worried about that, although nothing ever happened. I started delivering the paper. The trouble with the Globe and Mail, it's going to be on the doorstep by 9 o'clock or you got complaints. The worst second part was you had to collect the money. The kids collected the money. If they didn't pay, that came out of your pocket.
Oh.
So my mom said, you need a job. You don't want a job that costs me money because she would pay that.
Oh.
So she made me quit that. What was the other job? I did a lot of shoveling snow. I worked at a little grocery store for a little while. Then when I was old enough, I got a job at McDonald's and I worked there for 9 years.
You did have a lot of jobs.
Yeah, yeah. I remember one time I found a box of records. And they weren't real records. They were. They had one song in them, and they would be test records, basically. Had only one thing. So I thought I'd go door-to-door and sell these. And I actually sold quite a few of them. I do remember a man on Albany, and he said, let me see if this even plays, because it was a flexible record, right? And he put it on his record player to play it. So he actually gave me 50 cents for it.
Whoa. So you were a young entrepreneur?
A little bit.
And
I guess.
Why not?
Yeah.
Nobody was going to give it to you.
Nobody's
going to
give it
to
you. You had to earn the money. That's
yeah.
right. I did a lot of shoveling snow. I do remember that for
the
neighbors.
You listed a lot of different jobs you had.
Yeah.
Those
and I wanted a car, too, later in life.
Yeah.
And I do remember it when I when I graduated from Ryerson, I had $16,000 in the bank. But the reason for that was I was able to live at home, and many people, kids, grew up in the neighborhood, did live at home while they went to university.
Yeah.
So you had to go to U of T, Ryerson, or maybe York. You'd have to travel, but you didn't. We weren't lucky enough that you're going to McGill, and you know, you just didn't. You couldn't. Your parents couldn't afford that. know, so you stayed at home. They'd help you along, and
they didn't charge you.
No, they didn't charge. Yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah. You know, they're happy enough you're going to university.
Yeah, right.
And that was typical for here too. A lot of parents did that for their kids. Although I don't remember too many Portuguese and Italians going to university because they went to work. Those.
And that's what the parents.
That's what
those
the parents,
are the parents.
Because that
values.
Was yeah, that was important to them. If Dad owned a construction company, that was their value. That's right. And they owned a construction. Then you're going to take over this business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So if they wanted to go to university, they probably really had a battle on their hands.
Yes, they would have been, because their parents would have pulled them out of school at 14. I remember the school board saying, you know, teacher saying, "Where's what so and so?" And they knew he was pulled out of school to go work with Dad.
And it was hard to fight the parents.
Yes. Where the Jewish didn't do that. The Jewish, you went to university and you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. And that's what they all became.
Yeah.
Like I told you, the junk man, his kids, one was a lawyer, and I don't know, I think the other one was a doctor. And he worked the linguist.
Yeah.
We used to get bread delivered with a horse. I remember a horse on Harvard Street with a bent back. He was a very old,
old horse.
And a very, very old horse. It was. This would have been the late 60s, so he must have been the last guy in the neighborhood delivering with
And that was bread that he
yeah.
was
doing. I'm sorry, milk. Uh-huh. But we used to get bread delivered too. In fact, the services were better in those days. We used to
so
get milk.
Bread was one person,
yeah,
and milk
was
another
person. That's right.
Did he have a small refrigerator?
He must have had it in ice or something. I don't remember.
For sure.
Yeah, they were in bottles too. And
yes.
You would leave the bottles out on the stoop, uh-huh. and he would take them in a wire basket, and we used to feed carrots to his horse. So.
Nice memory.
Yes.
Did the horse have a name?
Can't remember. He had a bent back, that's for sure.
But you remember that.
Yes, yes. And I remember there was a black woman. She must have been in the neighborhood because she was way before my mom. She lived on board and right near the Boulevard Cafe. And she had a dog who you would see all over the city. As a kid, that's you have funny memories as a kid. And we used to call the dog Stinky Dog because he kind of smelled. But you'd find this dog everywhere, right?
And always found his way home back.
Always found his way home. And there were lots of stray dogs and cats in the neighborhood. It's not like today you have to keep them. And they'd be everywhere. They weren't mean or anything. But and you knew whose dog it was. You know?
Yeah.
As kids, you knew. That was Stinky Dog belonged to that lady over there.
But it was a neighborhood.
Yep.
Sure. But it still is a neighborhood.
Still is,
yeah.
Yeah. After the Jewish had moved out, we did notice that it was multicultural. There was a Japanese family, there were blacks, there were Polish. It was a bit of everything. Then it started becoming mostly Portuguese and Italian. Then that big wave came in, and it kind of, the other people left. I do remember a lot of Portuguese and Italian.
Approximately.
I'm thinking around the late 60s, especially the Portuguese. They started coming here in the late 60s and early 70s. That's when they came in. And a lot of them are left. They're old now, if you notice. They're the ones who destroyed the homes by putting that awful brick. You know, they took down the old brick and they put that. It's all Portuguese that did that.
Uh-huh. You can see the different gardens too.
Yes.
There's people who have the more manicured gardens with symmetry.
Yeah. The Italians didn't stay too long. And my mother used to say the Italians followed the Jews. They went up Bathurst Street.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they can have it.
Yeah. Well, it was not a neighborhood you wanted to stay.
Because it signified that you were poor.
Yes, that's right. You didn't acquire enough to move.
Well, and as you said, that you know, there was some disagreement amongst your father.
Yeah.
I mean, your father wanted a bigger, more expansive.
Yes, he always dreamed of Hyde Park, Palmerston was another, if you could. But then Palmerston became all rooming houses, too.
Yeah. Well, before I say goodbye, I just wonder, when you knew that we were going to have this conversation, was there anything that you knew you wanted to talk about that I have not touched on?
I was thinking about that, and you know what's going to be funny? When you leave, some significant thing, it always happens that way, right?
Well, you know, if there's something that you feel we really missed, I could come back and add it.
Yeah.
But I think that for now...
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it probably was similar stories. If you had talked to the boys in major, it would have been nothing really that much different. Things have changed now because kids have money. You don't see kids on the street anymore because they're all on the computers now. Yeah. Or the parents organize everything for them. Yeah. You know, they'll take them to hockey, baseball, where we did all that ourselves. We would...
Walk out the front door.
Yeah, and your little group who lived close to you would play baseball in the summer against another group of kids down the street. Then we'd play street hockey. Very little ice hockey because our parents didn't have the money for that. You know, you need equipment for that.
Yeah.
So we used to go down to Alexander Park Now that was a rough neighborhood, and I do remember coming home in my skates because someone stole my shoes. Yeah. Then later on, they built that arena at U of T, and we started going there, and it was much safer. So my mom was very happy when they built that one.
So it was very clear which areas were safe and which
were. This was always a safe neighborhood. It wasn't rich,
except
but it was
petty crime.
That's what kids did. Yeah, you know, you right. didn't steal cars or anything. But if you left a bicycle there, it was going to disappear, right? when they opened up the pool at Central Tech, then we started going there in the summer, swimming there too. It was a good way to cool off, and that's where we learned to swim, and I got my
instructors
there. Yeah, I had the instructors. Yeah. I never did do that, but I did have the instructors' certificate, I guess it was. Yeah. And all our friends started doing that kind of stuff too. But that's more when it started getting more gentrified too. The old, before that, there was none of that for us. Ulster Park wasn't, Margaret, wasn't even there. They tore down 6 or 8 houses to build that.
So that, they tore down some houses, and also across from the Nerriver Synagogue on Brunswick, north of Harvard.
Yes.
They also tore something down there. There's a nice little park there.
Yes. Oh, no, that little tiny park between the houses?
Yes.
That was Lusso's auto body. And the neighborhood, especially when it started getting gentrified, wanted him out of there because he was repairing cars between there. And one day it burned down. So we're not sure exactly what happened. But
it burned down.
Yeah, and that's why that little park, the city, then they petitioned the city, and I guess they acquired the property, and that's when that went in. But as kids, that wasn't even there. So there was very little green space for us to play.
So we have that. But I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was Lusso's garage, auto body. Yeah, I think it was a kind of a, I don't know, cars would go in, and there was some funny stuff going on there. But the neighborhood didn't want them there either. Yeah.
So, okay, anyway.
Yeah. So there was no green space
so
for
those
us.
Were the,
yeah.
those
so
are
the lanes,
now,
yeah.
Now there is a bit of green.
Yes.
Where it wasn't before.
Yeah. Well, even the Central Tech track, that wasn't there. Yeah, that came in the late 60s, early 70s. That was a whole neighborhood.
That too was home.
That was homes and businesses there. Yeah. My mother would tell, if she was alive, would tell you exactly what was in there. So that wasn't even there.
So a lot of buildings came down in order to create some space.
Some space, yeah. And that's in this, when it started becoming gentrified, then they started realizing to create a neighborhood, you actually have to have green space, you know.
Even if you have to burn something down
exactly.
to make it.
Well, European people also hated trees, so they would cut down trees because to them, a tree is dirty. Unless it produces fruit, they don't want it. So they started cutting down all the trees, and then they had to come and protect the trees. If you notice any in front of a Portuguese person's house or Italian, you won't find a tree. They hate trees. I still remember we were behind us was an Italian family, and he had this gorgeous, I don't know what kind of tree it was. It must have went up 200 feet, and he cut it down. And my mother actually had a big fight with him. And she said, "You're killing this beautiful tree." He didn't care. They don't like trees.
Your mother was a modern person.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, sort of. Not completely. Yeah. I do remember going with her to meetings at Central Tech when they were putting in bicycle lanes, and it was Jane Jacobs speaking. So, yeah, we did go to some of this stuff. I actually ran politically myself, too. I ran for school trustee. I think it was 1990, I believe it was. Yeah.
So that's just shortly before you left here.
Yes, that's right. I almost won, too. I ran as an independent, and this area was still is completely NDP at that time. Uh-huh. And you are not supposed to run with any party affiliation, but they do. And I had a $900 budget. They had $18,000, I believe.
Oh.
And I only lost by 400 votes.
Good for you.
And the reason I ran politically, because a friend of mine was a counselor up in North York, and I used to help them out. And I said, I could do that. You know, and I was always quite political, and I enjoy history and all this.
I
so
I know that you enjoy history. It's a pleasure.
So I ran, right? I said, I could do it. I didn't win, but it was a great experience. And you knock on all the doors, and you met a lot of people, and you got all different opinions.
Would you consider that again?
No. I'm quite happy in what I do, and no, I don't think so. No.
Well, John Scalpello, I want to say thank you. You told me such interesting stories. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, it's
to speak
more of
you.
A modern. If you talk to older people, you'll get a different perspective.
I am speaking to some older people.
Yeah,
I'm speaking to whoever I will.
Yeah, because my mom would have told you stories that were told. I'm telling you stuff that happened from my memory, which would have been mid 60s and up. She would have told you, and you know, and like the bakery. I can imagine the stories they could tell you. They've been there since 1929, a few generations.
Yeah, I interviewed Ruffy, but of course I can't interview his parents. It's too late for that.
Yeah.
Well, John, thank you so much. Okay. What a pleasure.